Could we all say the serenity prayer, please? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Well, I don't know about you, but I've had a fantastic weekend sitting around and embellished and surrounded by the concepts and the precepts which it gave me life and continues to give me substance and direction and happiness in this thing called life and into this magnificent program of action called Alcoholics Anonymous. And this morning, tie this thing up, I'll talk to you about the maintenance steps of our program of recovery. The maintenance steps of our program of recovery are steps 10, 11, and 12. Those are maintenance steps. And like everything else that this book has to offer, everything else this book has to talk about, when they wrote this book, there was an assumption. I seemed to feel an assumption when I studied this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The assumption is that these people are under the assumption when they write these things in this book that the people who are reading to this state or to this place in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous have advanced to a point through the first concepts or steps of this program of action and recovery. They're under the assumption. I always feel that they're under the assumption because they keep making statements that are assuming statements, that you are right here. You have done this up to this point. This is where you should be at this point. And if you aren't at this point, then you should go back and start again till you get to this point. And so many times in my own sobriety, I have sit back and waited to figure out where I was at the right point, and that's the point where I have to have a little nudge or something from somebody to tell me, don't give a damn where you think you are, go on, move on. It's just like I told you at the beginning Friday night that when I talked to my sponsor about going on retreats, he said, we're not supposed to retreat in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're supposed to advance. Because it's a program of recovery. It's a program that you're supposed to grow along spiritual lines, and hopefully you're better today than you were yesterday, and the day before that, and the day before that. Because I remember one time I went up to see this old man that I've been referring to, Chuck, all the time. I went up to see him. I sat in his house, and I was concerned about something because I was sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hear people say things like, or their actions and their manners and their things were basically they were the last time I saw them, and nothing in their life had changed. They're the same, and I'm not talking about gaining material situations or advancing in a job or being something else. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about their manner and their actions and their basic behavioral patterns. I'm not talking about the advance. Hell, if you don't drink and save your money, you're bound to do better materially if you're working. You know, of course, a lot of people don't think they have to work because they're sober either. They think, you know, we'll just sit down here at the club and play pinochle and God will shoot us something down here sooner or later. And so I sat there and talked to him about it. And I was thinking about this morning as I walked out on the point down by the pool and looked at it. And I looked around. And if you look around you in this magnificent place, in this magnificent setting, you see, if you look out the window, everything out there in God's world is doing one of two things. It's either growing or it's dying. It's not sitting still. And being one of God's creatures, I'm doing one of two things. I'm either growing or I'm dying. I'm not doing both at the same time. In other words, what I'm trying to say is I can't sit still. I have to continue to go on. And that's what the 10th step says in this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says in this book that this thought brings us to step 10. That's right after this promises have been made to us that we've completed the 9th step of our program of recovery. There's something that should have happened to us. These promises should be starting to be fulfilled somewhere in our lives. They should be. There should be some fulfillment of these promises in our lives as a result of doing these things. Not a result of not drinking, but a result of not taking this course of action, of taking this course of action, some of these magnificent things just happen. It says in this book that this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. That's what the maintenance steps are for. That means we can't sit back and rest on the laurels. It says in the next page that it's easy to set up on a spiritual program of action and rest on the laurels. And then it makes a fantastic statement, a promise, if you will. We are headed for trouble if we do. Because alcohol is the trouble for. We're not cured of alcoholism. And a lot of people would have you believe, I suppose, that you're cured of alcoholism the minute you don't drink no more. And if that was true, all these treatment centers would turn out winners. They'd turn them out by the busload. And if that was true, if we were cured of alcoholism the minute we quit drinking, none of us would ever have any problems again. We'd just be wonderful folks wandering around through this happy road of destiny, smiling at one another, and nobody'd ever have to get up and run out of the dining room because one of those imperfect people did something over there in the corner. And I tell you one thing. I used to think that, you know, you could. I haven't seen anything clear out like that since I went to 5 minutes before the last meeting at the last Alano Club I went to. They got a thing about them Alano Clubs, boys. You drive into those things about 5 minutes before the meeting starts, they start leaving, you know. You run over by them things. It's just an amazing thing that Alcoholics Anonymous is what it is. It's a spiritual program of action and rest on the laurels. And the reason I tell you that is because I told a guy one night that he was complacent, that he was starting to take this program of Alcoholics Anonymous for granted. And he was complacent, and he went home and he looked up the word complacency in a dictionary. And the word complacency in a dictionary says it's a sense of well-being while surrounded by danger. And that's a pretty heavy statement for an alcoholic, because we all, or me particularly, I don't know about any of you, but me particularly, there are times, lots of times, when it's easy for me to sit back and rest on my laurels and try to live on the laurels or the accolades or the actions that I took last week. And this book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me I've got a daily reprieve from this madness of mine called alcoholism that's conditioned upon my maintenance of certain spiritual conditions. And I don't understand that, because I don't know where I got any spiritual conditions to maintain, because I didn't have any when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I told you somewhere during the last couple of days that I was a taker and a user and abuser of things. I thought only of me and mine and what I could get and what I could use and what I didn't. And somewhere along the line in this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, through the application of these steps, from time to time in my life, I become a giver. I give a little just for the hell of giving it. And I don't expect to get any rewards out of it. I don't get any financial compensation for any of this kind of nonsense. I don't do any of this kind of stuff. I just do it because I love to do it. You know, I was sitting here talking about, in the room in there, we were talking a little bit about sponsorship, and one of the guys came in and was talking to me and said, he was here 2 years ago, and he said, he said, it was nice to look and see that I've really changed and I have grown in 2 years. And I thought that was nice, but I said to him, well, wouldn't it be a lot easier to say that we both have? Maybe I look different and sound different to you because you hear different and see different. And it goes along with that little story I told you about, you know, going down and looking at the ocean and seeing for 7 miles and standing on a cliff 1,000 feet high, how you can see for 200 miles. The higher you go, the further you see. So that made me feel good, because the individual told me that, not only told me that he was growing along spiritual lines, but in his observation, so was I. And the only thing that's happened to me, the antidote, the only thing I've been doing in the last 2 years, if I've grown any, is what I do all the time, what I've been doing for the last 28 years of my life. Being close to and active in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. trying to give a little, showing up in a home group in a meeting when I'm supposed to be there, sitting in that seat, sharing with newcomers, talking to newcomers. I'm always surrounded about newcomers. God, they keep you busy, them guys. God, they got more questions, and most of them have answers before they ask questions, you know. You know, I get a kick out of how they kind of cock their little heads, you know, like, look at you kind of like, really, you know. And one guy walked up to me the other night, and he said, I don't understand what's going on. He said, damn it, he said, my wife is just going nuts. And I said, why don't you go in there and wash the coffee pots? And he'd give me that look, you know, like, what has that got to do with my wife? And I said, well, I don't know. You know, maybe if you wash them coffee pots, you'll get her off your mind for a little while. And it's just an amazing situation what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous in this program of action. It says in this book that every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. Every day. Not just yesterday or tomorrow or today. Now, here we are sitting here. We've had a fantastic weekend, or at least I have, you know, and I've sit here and I've heard a lot of nice things, and I've sit in the meetings, I've heard you talk, and I've fellowshipped, and we've fellowshipped, and we've laughed, and we've giggled, and we've talked about some of the heavy things. And this is fine and dandy. But you see, whatever it is, I take it, tomorrow I'll be out there in the real world with me. I better have some of this with me when I go. It'd be nice to be able to take this feeling of euphoria and walk out there into the world with it and carry it with me wherever I go. And that's just exactly what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. Every day is the day when we must carry this vision of God's into all of our activities. How best can I serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Thy will. That's God's will, not mine. That's all I do. I get up in the morning and I read my third step prayer. I read essentially everything it says. I read step 10 in this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 84, 85, 86, and 87, every day of my life. I read the last portion of a paragraph of a vision for you, and I read the thought for the day in the 24-hour day book. And that somehow really seems to get my day going. I may step out the door of my house and 15 minutes later and forgot everything I read. You know, honking the horn and screaming down the freeway like a wonderful spiritual person that I am. It's just really something. It says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. And you really want to see an alcoholic cringe? Talk to him about directions. Oh, what do you mean? I ain't going to take no goddamned orders. They don't say anything about orders. It's directions. And yet we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, every one of us headed in the wrong direction, just as fast as we can go. We're headed for hell as fast as we can handle it. You know, and then we come in here and somebody says, you know, it'd be easy for you if you follow a few simple directions. Don't you give me no damn rules, baby. I know exactly what I'm doing. Isn't that simple? The book don't say that. The book says direction. Man, I followed directions when I was in the penitentiary, I'll tell you. I better. Well, I didn't all the time. Of course, they locked me up in that little room and stay in there till we follow your directions, they tell me. But that's what I'm trying to say. An alcoholic personality is a very tricky thing. The alcoholic personality is a very deadly thing. Because I've already told you that the problem of the alcoholic center is in his mind. That's the problem. Once he gets physically sober, like we're all physically sober, the problem is centered in his mind. We're always trying to replay. I don't know what it is about the alcoholic mind, but mine is that if I go back and look at something in my past, if I'm trying to reflect back there in that insanity, it doesn't seem that I can ever get too deep into them shock treatments or them straight jackets or those high-pressure fire hoses or those beatings that those cops used to give me and the stuff like that. I think about riding around them good cars with them fancy women and how neat that life was and how easy that money rolled in and all that kind of nonsense. And the thing that separates me from embellishing on that thing is my knowledge that the idea that I may have to go back to the penitentiary if I got loaded again, or I may have to run them streets like a mad dog like I did again, or maybe die out there in them streets, or the fact of getting loaded or used up, that never centers in my mind. That doesn't bother me. That doesn't scare me at all. I just never want to be ever again the thing that I was when I did those things. I never want to be that blood-sucking parasite in society that I was before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't ever want to be that thing who thought only of me, constantly of me, 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 I, what am I? I never want to be that thing totally again. Because I get glimpses of that from time to time, and it scares me to death. I become that from time to time, and it scares me absolutely and totally to death. And that's why I jump so heavily into this. That's why I stay so close to Alcoholics Anonymous. And don't engage myself in too many outside silly things that will booster my ego and make me feel better about myself and separate me from you. Because my ego is a killer instinct in my life. I can get to thinking I'm normal sometime. I can do all these things. That's why from time to time in my life since I've been sober, my priorities have got completely out of whack. Completely out of whack. The most dangerous thing, the most closest time I've ever come to getting loaded in Alcoholics Anonymous was in my sixth or seventh year when my priorities were so far out of whack I didn't know what was going on. By the time I was 5 or 6 or 7 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous out of the penitentiary, I'd accumulated a few things. I was working and big car, and you know, I had a wife that was drinking and 2 little kids that was going crazy, and my household was a mess, and I didn't know what was going on. And what happened to me was I got more and pensioned and more involved and more concerned about the material than I was about the spiritual. I became more interested in what was going on out there and what they thought of me out there and what I had become out there than what I had you think about me in here. I became too involved to become just one among many because I was starting to become something out there. And so when I become something out there, I almost become too big to be nothing in here. And that's a very dangerous thing for a person like me. Because if I don't stay here and stay close to this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got nothing. No matter what I may have, or no matter what I may accumulate, I always have to remember. Always have to remember that this is the spring that has flowed through my life and cleaned it up and made it possible for everything to be in my life. It's not opposite. It's not the opposite of that. One of the great blessings I have in my life is the knowledge that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there wasn't anything or anybody left. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous all by myself, just me. And you people took me on face value, and I have never forgotten that. You took me when nobody else wanted me, and I would have taken me on a large bet, that thing that walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's why this step, this maintenance step, is so important to me. That's why I read it. It says, you know, I'm always seeing direction. Careful, follow the direction, and I follow the direction. To some extent, I have become God-conscious, and to some extent, I have become God-conscious. I have become God-conscious. I know that there's a power working in my life because there isn't any way for me to get from where I was to where I am. I had to have power. I had to have some power working in my life. But I've also had to walk the walk. I've had to take the actions. I've had to follow the directions. I've had to do things. I've had to follow directions that I knew they were wrong. And I told him so. Damn it, that don't make sense. So I don't care what makes any sense to you or not. I just care where you do it. I'll show him. I'll do it. It won't work. First thing I know, I'm doing it, and I forgot what it was I was supposed to be doing. It didn't work. It's amazing. It's amazing. It just, that's my attitude. That's my natural attitude. My natural attitude, don't tell me what to do, goddamn you. I know how to run my own life. Look what I did with it for 28 years. Just wonderful. Well, what did you do with it? Oh, I don't know. I ended up crawling around in a cell in solitary confinement, barking at the moon, but I was doing real well with it along about that time. When I was running my own life, I subject myself to shock treatments, to hydrotherapy, high-pressure fire hoses, beating by policemen, running up and down the alleys, in and out of streets, being shot at, shooting at people, stealing, using, abusing. I just really was doing real well. Self-will run riot. And you see, there was nothing in my life. And then I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wanted to balk at following directions. I didn't want to follow any directions. I wanted to do it my way. Whenever I wanted to do it my way. And my way don't work, folks. My way don't work. This way works. My way doesn't work. And everything about me, everything about my head seems to tell me, I know better. That's too simple. That's too simple. We were going home from a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous one night, myself and a carload full of newcomers. And we're riding around, and I got this big fancy automobile, and that impresses newcomers. Big fancy automobiles, that impresses them. They think you've always had that. They think, yeah, it's easy for you to say you've got this big fancy car that didn't come here with it. Oh, I bet you did. I know, they always seem to think that. I don't know why they think that. Newcomers seem to think you just drove in here in your BMW and, you know, your little yucky outfit or whatever it is you do, and they think that's the way you came in here. Well, they don't know any better. That's the way they think, that's what they see. And this guy was telling me, he said, man, he said, I'd sure like to have one of these cars. I said, well, just keep going to meetings and going to work and going to meetings and going to work and practice these steps and you'll get it. He said, wait a minute. He said, what are you doing? I said, I've been doing this. What you see me doing tonight is what I always do. What you've seen me do today is what I've been doing all these years. He said, there's got to be more to it than that. And I said, no, there's not any more to it than that. Your ego tells you there's more to it than that. Because my ego wants to say to me, look what I have done. Look what I have accomplished. Look at this. Look at me. Look where I am. Look what I have accomplished. Look at my big car. Look at my big suit of clothes. Look at my big pocketbook. Look at my big degree. Look at my this. Look at my that. Look what I have accomplished. No, that's what your directions and your examples have brought about in my life. That's what it is. That's by following these simple directions here that I don't want to follow. By doing the things that I didn't think would work when you told me to do them, that they would work. And I'm not bound by any blood oath to do it. I don't have to. Nobody has to do anything here. And I've never been told that I had to do anything here. They just tell me, they suggest that I do these simple things. And if I don't want to do it, they won't suggest them anymore. And so I've done these simple things. It says somewhere in this book that somewhere in the 10th step we have begun to develop a vital sixth sense. But then it makes another statement here. This book keeps making these statements and assumptions, but we must go further. That means we're at some point. And this means more action. Golly! It says in step 11, it suggests that we prayer and meditation, and we shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. It's better men than we are using it constantly. It works. It works. If we have the proper attitude and work at it. They're always putting them little subtle things in there. They don't whack you every now and then. If we work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And then they tell me what to do when I retire at night. This is, I constructively review my day. Were we resentful, selfish, honest, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? We all know that. I know that. If I sit down and I honestly evaluate my day and I'm not clouded up about how magnificent I am or what I've accomplished that day, or I'm not involved in personal things, you know, money, property, prestige, home, women, jobs, or whatever it is I'm involved in at that moment, if they haven't clouded up my thing, my mind is pretty thing. The conflict that's in my life have kept me awake from time to time. But when I'm talking about when I've got my life in some type of an order, when there's some type of order and some type of structure in my life, when I'm doing the things I'm supposed to, when I lay down at night, I know if I've been resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. You know, do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another human being? Have I swallowed another one of them deep secrets? And I heard a guy say one time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really loved it. He said, we're as sick as our secrets. Isn't that amazing? We're as sick as our secrets. You know, before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I never had the ability to look anybody in the eye. I was a fly chaser. I looked around, up and down, in and out. You know what I mean? How you talk, oh, yeah, it's wonderful. You know, yeah, sure. You know, And I always had some kind of an idea of what it was, but when I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned a simple thing. I learned something. Somebody told me one time that the eyes are the mirror of the soul. And I think alcoholics intuitively know that. I think we know that people can look in here and see what's going on in here. I can look in people's eyes and see all kinds of things. I've sit around Alcoholics Anonymous long enough and watched people's eyes change. I've watched newcomers come into the doors with that lost, frightened, beaten, scared, hateful look in their eyes. But I have watched them embellish and embrace this program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've watched their eyes change. And then I have watched people come into Alcoholics Anonymous for long periods of time with those eyes, those hateful, bitter, dead eyes that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, and sit around in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and their eyes never change. And the reason that has come to be, so I've come to understand, is because I've come to understand that this thing that we're into is an inside job. It's on the inside, not on the outside. What we do on the outside is nothing. We can all come in here and look better on the outside. We can get us a new set of clothes. We can pretty ourselves up. We can get us a new car. We can get us a new profession, a new job. We could all look real pretty on the outside. You know, we have a thing in Long Beach where I live. It's amazing. We have a beautiful harbor and a beautiful thing down there in Long Beach. It's beautiful. And a few years ago, they put some oil islands out there in that harbor. Now, they have a lot of oil islands and platforms and stuff off the coast of Santa Barbara. But you look out there and you see them off the coast of Santa Barbara, and the people are always writing little letters about how ugly those things are. In Long Beach, they've dressed them up to look like they're apartment buildings sitting out there. But behind those superficial buildings are still oil islands. And there's still oil wells. And they're still ugly and they're still dirty. And they're just like every other oil field that I've ever known, and I know because I worked in the oil fields. And what I'm trying to tell you is that you can dress up anything and make it look better, but if you don't clean up the difference and change what it is, it's still what it is. If I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm a hateful, selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, no-good son of a bitch, which I was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you dress me up and put me in an apartment building, give me a new profession and a suit of clothes and a nice automobile, educate me a little bit or do something with me, that doesn't make me any less of a son of a bitch than I was if I haven't done anything about what I really am in here. It's an inside job. You got to clean up the inside before the outsides make any sense. You can dress up anybody. It doesn't make any difference. You can dress up a monkey. You'll be a monkey. I get a kick out of all these people running around and say they've been born again. I think that's a real neat thing. I'm going to tell you something. A born-again turkey is still a turkey. Doesn't make any difference. There's basically something happened to me. It says in this book that after I've made the review of my day, I'm supposed to ask God's forgiveness. God's forgiveness. I'm supposed to ask God's forgiveness for trying to be that. And I suppose what they're saying in here, what I think it says to me, is that I'm supposed to ask God forgiveness for not acting like his kid. You see? For that period of time when I've been resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid, or critical, or self-serving, or self-seeking. See, that's not God's kid. God's kids aren't self-serving and self-centering. God's kids are giving children. Loving children to a loving father and an infinite life, amen. On and on and on. That's the way it is. I didn't know that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. It says that when I wake up in the morning, I got to think about the 24 hours a day. I woke up this morning, I thought about the 24 hours ahead. Thought about coming here and getting this session over and driving back to Portland and getting on the airplane with Larry and flying into Long Beach and having that lovely lady that I love so much pick me up at the airport with my little puppy and take me home. I can kick off my boots and get in front of that television set and go on the nod. That's what I do. I go on a nod with a bowl of popcorn sitting there. It says that I got to constantly ask God to direct my thinking, especially ask him to be divorced from self-pity dishonest or self-seeking motives. Well, I'm amazed at this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to a book study meeting, and we go through the first 164 pages of this thing on a regular basis. It takes us sometimes 2 years to get through it. But how many times this book keeps referring back to selfishness and self-centeredness and self-seeking? I'm amazed at this. And I'm amazed at this because the very answer to this thing, the very answer to the third step prayer says I have to be relieved from the bondage of self. Way back in the third step, it tells me that I got to ask God to relieve me from the bondage of self. And then way over here in the 11th step, when I'm seeking through prayer and meditation, I got to constantly, now that I'm so wonderful from these other six steps, and I'm launched on this sea of magnificence, it says I got to constantly tell him, constantly be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. If I got to constantly be reminded, it means it's got to be constantly coming to me. Constantly coming to me. The battle is still there. The thing is still going on. Self is still trying to take over and tell me I don't have to, I don't need to, I don't want to, I've been here, I don't have to. I, me, I got this, I'm that, I'm this. Look at me, look how good I'm doing. I'm not, look how well I am. Look, I'm going to go, I'm not going to, I'm blah, blah, blah. Me, that's all, that's a constant battle within me. And the thing that separates this is it says here, when I get in this kind of state, so I got to relax and take it easy. You know, hey, wait a minute, come on, God. You know, I know I'm a little out of line. What am I supposed to do about this? I don't struggle. It said, what used to be a hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of my mind. What used to be a hunch or an inspiration. We were talking about that in a room a while ago. Guy said, I think I ought to be doing something. I said, how do you think God talks to you? That's the way God talks to me. God, I get this little thought in the back of my head that I ought to go over and do this. I get this little squirmy feeling in my thumb. I ought to take this action. I know there's something missing in me. I ought to go do this. It's like taking a trip back to see my dad. Constantly. It's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. And then it makes a fantastic statement that you're inspired at all times. It says, we might pay for this presumption with all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Let's assume that I'm inspired, godly and divinely inspired, and I'm going to step out into the sea of alcoholism with my sword and charge out there and do it. What a stupid, foolish thing that would be. Really, I remember one time I made a call on this kid who was in a reform school out in Ontario. And he was one of them real hipsters. You know, I mean, he was hip. He was about 16 years old, and, you know, he'd been in there, and he got his hair slicked back. And, you know, he was so hip, the balls of his feet tickled him when he walked. And the reason I went out there to see him, because his mother was a neighbor of mine, and, she came down to talk to me one day. She found out I was an Alcoholics Anonymous because she was going to Al-Anon. She came down to talk to me about it one day. She said, would you talk to my son? And I said, yeah, I'll talk to him. And so one day she sent him down there, and he came down there, and he said, and he got all the answers. And I told him, well, kid, I'll tell you what you do. When you get wherever you're going, when they catch you and get you to wherever you're going, you call me. I'll come visit you. And he was very indignant about that. What makes you think I'm going to get caught? I said, it's obvious to me, you know, you can get arrested for overacting, if nothing else, you know what I mean? and to make a long story short, 3 or 4 months later, they drug him down the pathway of the apartment building, you know, hippity-hopping on the way to jail, you know. And I went out to visit him, and he said, I want to get clean and stay clean. I says, you do? He says, yeah. I says, you may have to do something entirely foreign to you. He says, what do you think I should have to do? And I said, what do you think would happen if you went back into that day room and they're over there playing them Johnny Cash records and playing them dominoes and talking that stuff, and you jumped up on there and turned that TV set off and that radio and jumped at the middle of that card table and said, I want to talk to you about God. He said, God did kill me. And I said, Jeff, you got the idea, but you may have to do something like that. And he didn't understand what I was trying to tell him. What I was trying to tell him was that he had to completely and totally reverse his image situation. And basically, instead of me being a dope fiend and a convict and a badass, I'm just a basic little old drunken alcoholic who goes to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, goes out every day and sells his boxes and goes home to his wife and kids. Where I used to be a big-time dope dealer and a big-time pimp and a big-time convict who rode around in fancy cars using and abusing people. Now I try to see I can balance my checkbook once a month. That's what I'm talking about. And that hasn't been done if I've done anything consciously to do that. That has happened to me because of an evolutionary change that has happened to me as a result of following these simple directions in this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And more importantly, the people who have went before me, the people who did these things, and their life changed. I followed their direction. There's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, if they would ask me to follow their directions, I wouldn't follow them. I wouldn't follow them. I don't want what they got. No, sir, I don't want a damn thing some of them got. But by the same token, there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who don't want a damn thing I got. And that's all right, too. It says in this book, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And if somebody tells me they don't have to take steps and do these things, they're telling me they don't want a damn thing this book has to offer. That's all. That's what they're telling me. It may not be true. It may not be what they really mean, but it's what I think they're saying. If you stand up to me and tell me, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not going to do those steps. I'm not going to follow any directions. I'm not going to do this at all. You're telling me you don't want a damn thing we got here. That's all. You can tell me you're perfectly content to go sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and fight booze, and be angry and hostile and bitter, and be on a dry drunk. Man, there ain't anything worse than fighting a drunk. Remember what it used to be like when you were sober, those periods before you came to Alcoholics Anonymous? How restless and irritable and discontent you were, and every once in a while you just, Nyah! Oh, wonder what happened there. You know, you got to get drunk again. It says that we remember. It says if we're members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few said prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. They're at it again, ain't they? They're nailing us again with them principles and stuff. They didn't say, you know, saw a few prayers about getting a new automobile or my wife straightening up. About these principles. It says to be principled, to be constantly on the alert from self-seeking and dishonest or self-pity, self-serving motives. If I want somebody who's close to me to straighten up and treat me better, because I deserve it, that's a self-seeking self-motivation. I should want somebody to straighten up because I want them to be better. I actually want somebody to embrace this program of Alcoholics Anonymous because I want them to find what I found here. That's why. I should want somebody to embrace a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, a program of Al-Anon or Al-Ateen or Al-Adog or whatever else they're after. I should want them to embrace these principles because if I have really found something here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I should want everybody I come in contact with to have this. If I've ever found anything. That's what my prayer should be, these principles. These prayers of mine should be principles and emphasize on the principles we're being talking about here, the principles we've been talking about all weekend. Just simple principles. It says, when I'm agitated or doubtful, I stop and ask for the right thought or action. And I'm going to tell you something. Sometimes when I'm agitated and irritable, it's humanly impossible for me to stop and ask for the right thought or action. It's only when the insanity at the moment had run its course that I ever stop and reflect and I'm sorry for my actions. But you see, I found out it's not enough to know that my actions were bad. I have to truly be sorry for them. I have to really be sorry for my total actions. And that's when I have to go back and start making these amends. When I'm truly sorry for them, then God can remove them. God can't remove something I'm not sorry for. He can't remove them. If I know You know, I'm a selfish, no good son of a bitch. But I say, well, that's just the way I am. God remove it in His own time and bet He ain't never going to move it from me. When I can say that I am these things and I don't want to be these things anymore, and I'm sorry for being these things, and I'm sorry for being selfish and self-centered and self-seeking and self-serving and only me, I, and bitter. And when I'm sorry for that and I don't want to be that, when I can see the wrongness of it, not the rewards for having them removed, but for the wrongness of the action, then I believe God can remove them. I don't believe He can remove them from me. I don't believe He will remove them from me as long as to me there are things that I am not sorry for, that I don't know that's wrong or right. The reason I don't drink alcohol or use drugs anymore is not because they destroy me, because I know it's not right to do that anymore. I know it's wrong for me to do that, to me. The reason that I do any type of kind works or good acts or kind thoughts of any sort is because I know it's the right thing to do, not the wrong thing to do. I remember I was talking to a kid that I sponsored not long ago, and he got a bad problem with chasing around on his wife. Bad problem with it. He wasn't really chasing around on her. He just goes out someplace and takes care of action. Comes back and he feels guilty about it. And he wanted to know how long he's going to have to do that, because it pops up from time to time. And I said, you're going to have to do it as long or until you understand that it's wrong to do it. Not because of the consequences. The consequences don't scare an alcoholic. Hell, we don't care about the consequences. We're only looking for the pleasure. Right on, baby. Let me have that right now. I'll worry about that. Like that gal in Gone with the Wind. I'll worry about that tomorrow. See, I don't do certain things not because of the consequences. It's because they're wrong for me to do them. And when I know that they're wrong, and I fully accept that they're wrong for me to do, that they're foreign to God's will for me in my life, and they're foreign from God's design and plan in my life, and that's not the way God's kids live, when I know that's wrong, when I know that's opposite of the way God wants me to live, I don't do that anymore. The consequences, or the pleasures of them, the consequences, the pleasure become less and less. And the consequences will become heavier and heavier. Just like using. Man, I thought when I found heroin, I thought I found the answer to God's promise for me. I said things like, if God made anything better than heroin, He kept it to Himself. He did. He made Himself. Because what I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous is far better than anything I ever stuck in my arm. And you know, if I was to take anything, they would bring me down. They would just bring me down. Because I like all the stuff that happens to me. It says in this book, in the last part of this 11th step that we're on, that faith without works is dead. There they are again. That says you can't go off over there in the corner and pay for that hot dog and expect it to come through the window. Faith without works is dead. It says the next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. Next chapter, whole chapter devoted to step 12. And what is step 12? It says, having had, there they are again. See how they keep saying that? Having done, having had, we're assuming you're here, you're not there, you've moved this far, you've done these things. They keep assuming this kind of nonsense. That's why it's totally impossible. Why it's totally impossible to get the full benefits out of step 12 if you ain't done the 11. That's why I keep telling you that you can't go from 1, admit the first half of part 1, to 12. You can't admit your problems over alcohol and go out and carry the message. You ain't got no message. What, I don't drink? You go try that some guy sitting in jail. Tell him, I don't drink no more. He says, me either. That's what I used to say. I don't drink no more. Me either. Will as soon as I get out, though. Oh. That's what you're telling them, isn't it? I don't drink no more.
I'm powerless over alcohol. Don't drink no more. I'm here to carry the message. What message? You don't drink no more? Me either. This book says, the practical experience shows us that nothing will so much immune the sheer immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. I want you to know there's a lot of poop people in Alcoholics Anonymous who use this as a tool for their own stupidity. Listen to what it says right behind that. It works when other activities fail. That means if you've tried everything else, after you've tried these 11 steps, and you still in anonymous, then you carry the message to Alcoholics Anonymous. This works when these other activities have failed. That's what that means to me. That means I have done these things, and I'm still doing this kind of stuff. I'm still crazy, so I should go work with other alcoholics. That works when all this other stuff is not working. When I'm sitting on my throne paying some direction from God, that don't work no more. I got to go find me a wet drunk. Or a sick drunk, or a suffering alcoholic. And like I told you before, I don't know who suffers, who don't. It's not necessarily the newest man here. Could be the oldest one. It could be the one who's got it all together. I'm going to tell you, the last time I had it all together, I forgot where I put it. It says, this is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. Now, isn't that a fantastic statement to make to somebody? Listen to what this says. Try to assimilate the power of this statement. Try to. You can help when no one else can. God. That's a hell of a statement to make to a person who is worthless. Useless, has no direction, who has never done anything but take all his life. That's a hell of a statement to make to an individual like that. I can help when no one else can. And it doesn't make that statement. It doesn't say, Johnny Harris can help when no one else can. It says, you can help when no one else can. That means to me, what I see in that statement is that each and every one of us are an individual. We're all unique unto ourselves. There are going to be people's lives that I'll touch if I stay close to an active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there will be people in your life that you'll touch if you stay close to an Alcoholics Anonymous that I couldn't touch. One of the greatest statements I ever heard Chuck say, he said, Clancy worked with people that he couldn't even touch. But Clancy turned right around and said to Chuck, you work with people I wouldn't touch. See what I'm talking about? But they're uniquely them. And you're uniquely you. And I'm uniquely me. And Chuck used to say if they'd made two of us identical, one of us would be unnecessary. I can help, and you can help, but no one else can. And yet, there are times in my life, and I'm sure there's times in your life, when I would say to myself, I'm not going to the meeting tonight. I want to watch Crime Story on television. They won't miss me this week. The hell they won't. That might be the time when you can help when no one else can. And what would happen at that moment, the way I look at it? If I'm the one that's supposed to be there to help at that moment when no one else can and I'm not there, that one I'm supposed to help will get no help. And for an alcoholic to get no help is for an alcoholic to die. So therefore my commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous and to my home groups and to the meetings or the commitments to which I am committed to take preference over everything in my life. My home, my job, my work, my family, my golf game, everything. I was telling somebody at breakfast this morning, I belong to a golf course at home, and I bet there's only 3 Saturdays a year that I'm home to play golf on that golf course. If it was up to me and my choice, I'd be playing golf on that golf course every Saturday, 52 Saturdays a year. I like to play golf on that golf course. But when you call, the answer to you is that the date's open, it belongs to you. I don't care if it's Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Thanksgiving, New Year's, Happy Hanukkah, whatever it is, Valentine's Day, my wife's birthday, my kid's birthday. I never will forget one time, years ago, and it goes with this thing, that carried this message. I was at going out to talk at a meeting on Sunday morning. I don't ever know what day it is half the time. I just write it in the calendar. And I got ready to go out the door, and my little girl, my baby daughter, was there Sunday morning. And she said, "Where are you going, Daddy?" And I said, "I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "I got to go over there." And she said, "You'll miss my birthday. It's my birthday. We're having a birthday party here." And I said, "Oh." She said, "Don't you ever think about anybody but yourself?" God, I felt guilty about that, really. And she ran off, and she went in there and crying to my wife, and you know, and I felt God. I said, "What am I? I'm walking in my car." She said, "What kind of a no good self thinking? What kind of a unthinking bastard are you anyhow?" And just as I got into my car, my little girl come running out the door. "Just a minute, Daddy," she said. She ran over and she jumped up and she put her arms around me and she hugged me. And she said, "When you get to that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, will you do something for me?" And I said, "Well, sure, Punkin, if I can. What is it?" She said, "Will you thank the people of Alcoholics Anonymous for my daddy?" She was 7 years old. See, but if people like you hadn't taken time out of your busy lives to come see people like me, that little girl wouldn't even be here. She'd been born to me since I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if she was here, I wouldn't be here to take care of her. So she really knew what she was doing. She said, "Thank the people for my daddy." And that's what happens here. "See, I do thank you for her daddy. You're the most important thing in the world to me. If I don't come here, I don't go anywhere else. If I don't come here, I don't have anything else. But I do know that I have to continue to do this thing." It says in this book that life will take on a new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. And yet I see people in Alcoholics Anonymous all the time who are willing to miss it because they're so busy doing other things that they can't see the fellowship grow up around them. It's an amazing situation. But I guess it all depends on what you look through when you look through your glasses and what you see. Chuck told me that life is just like Alcoholics Anonymous, just like putting on a new pair of glasses. He goes along in this book to see what it says. It tells in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and working with others, you know, you hear people talk about it all the time. Don't mention God to the newcomer. That ain't what this book says. This book says we talk about God freely. Make no excuses for God. I don't make any excuses for God. God's the reason I am. God is the reason you are. We're all God's children. I don't make no excuses for that. God said, you hear people all the time say, "Oh, talk about goddamn newcomer, you run them out of AA." I don't know where they go. Most of them don't come here because they got someplace else to go. The book don't say that. The book says, the book, not me, not Johnny Harris, the book says that unless a man is willing to live by spiritual principles, you shouldn't waste your time on him. Isn't that amazing? I don't forget one time I got sober. You know how you are when you first get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous? You're going to sober up everybody. I was going to sober up my mother. Now, I want you to know my mother's 80-some years old. She still drinks whiskey out of a bottle. He only drinks half a pint at a time. But her legs are good from running back and forth to the liquor store. And I remember one time I was going to work on my mother. I devoted this weekend to getting my mother sober. And I don't know, well, I do know she's an alcoholic because the harder I worked on her, the drunker she got. And the more she drank, the harder I worked on her. And I found myself, had her down on the floor, choking her. Hitting her in the face with a pamphlet on sponsorship. God damn it, you got to get sober. And I'd been there for 3 days doing stuff like that, you know. And she has a great way of stopping me. God, she's got a great way of stopping. You know how the alcoholics are. You know, they got great defense mechanisms. Alcoholics got tremendous. My mother says to me, remember this, Buster. Now, you'd like your mother to call you some foreign name that's not yours. It really bothers you to begin with. Buster, she says, it was me who come to the nut house to visit you. And if you ever have to come to the nut house to visit me, then I'll join Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, that's when we went to the floor, I'll tell you. Well, I got out of there in a hurry when I found out I was choking her, and I ran over to this meeting to get a little understanding. And I ran over. There was an old lady by the name of Myrtle Snyder. Myrtle's dead now, and I loved her real well. And she was responsible for a lot of my sobriety. And she's standing there. I used to wash cups with her on Tuesday night at an Olano Club over in West Los Angeles. And I ran into this, got out of my car, and I run across the street. And she saw me coming. I guess she could see I was crazy. You do get them wild looks about your face. She said, "My God, what's the matter with you?" And I said, "It's my mother. I've been working on my mother for 3 days, and she won't get sober. I don't know what to do." And she said, "You poor dear." Oh. That's what you go to AA for, isn't it? So they stroke you, make you feel wonderful for being an asshole. She says, "Yeah, I feel sorry for you." She put her arms around me, and she said, "You know what, honey? If somebody came to you tonight and really wanted the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you ain't got nothing to give. You've been sitting over there spending all your time trying to get somebody sober who obviously doesn't want to be sober. And if somebody came to you tonight and wanted something to give, you ain't got nothing to give." Then she told me the cruelest statement I'd ever heard. She says, "You never want to deny anybody the privilege of suffering." Ooh, that's cruel. And this book says that. The book says that. The book says it takes a certain amount of despair and dedication and loneliness and hurt and anxiety to bring about surrender. To be willing to be desperate enough to have to grasp at this thing like a dying man, the drowning man's vest at a life straw, a life jacket. That's what you got to have here. That's the desperation. That's the desperation that motivates me, that keeps me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like a drowning man. This is my life raft. If I don't hang on to this thing, I'm going to drown, or them sharks are going to eat me up out there. And that's what Myrtle was trying to tell me. Don't deny anybody the privilege of suffering. We got people all over this country, so-called experts in alcoholism, who are trying to take the despair away from people. We're trying to remove people from their despair. You can't do that. That's God's business. It's not man's business. People have been running around Alcoholics Anonymous. Chuck used to run around all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, if he could just tell you how to surrender. Nobody can tell you how to surrender. You get enough pain, enough sick of you, enough of that sick of you that you can't stand you long enough. Deep down inside of every human being who's born upon the face of the earth is the idea and goodness of God. And in my darkest, darkest moment, in my total moment of despair, I called out to this God for the first time in my life in a deathbed 30 years ago in the old Los Angeles County Jail, and here I stand before you tonight, 30 years alive longer than the medical profession said I could live. That's surrender. The problem was that when I got up off of that bed 2 weeks later, I'm up running around the jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back on because I'd forgotten about the surrender, but I had surrendered. And I had to come into Alcoholics Anonymous to learn that every day of my life, I get up every day of my life, I have to surrender. And I have to surrender with the same desperation and the same depth that I did 30 years ago on that deathbed. I did it this morning, sitting in my bed, on the side of my bed, reading this book. I'm just as desperate to stay sober today in Alcoholics Anonymous and fulfill the conditions of this program in my life as I was 28 years ago when I came here. Just as desperate. Probably more so, if the truth is known. I'm probably more desperate to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous today than I was 28 years ago. 28 years ago when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't desperate. I just lost. I just lost. I didn't know I belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know there was a way for me to live. I had never seen the light. One of the most fantastic statements I ever heard. I heard Bob talk about it yesterday in that little meeting. He talked about Dr. Martin Luther King. He made a fantastic statement, which is I love. He says, I've been to the top of the mountain and I've seen paradise. I ain't going back in the valley. I ain't going back in the valley. I'm going to stay here. Because I've been to the top of the mountain, I've seen paradise, I ain't going back in the valley. You can if you want to. That's your business. It ain't my business. My business, I've been to the top of the mountain. I'm going to tell you something. If you've ever been to the top of the mountain and you've seen paradise, you ain't going back in the valley either, baby. Because this is it. This is the whole enchilada. This is the way God made me to be. A happy, joyous, contented, peaceful kid of his who just runs around and takes care of his business. And my father's business is my business. And your business is my business. That's why I'm at Manuka. To tell you that this program works, and it works real well, but you have to work it. It won't work you. You have to work it. God will give you the directions, will give you the inspiration, and bring the people into your life who will help you with this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But you have to be open-minded enough and willing enough and desperate enough to believe that when the people come and say, come walk with us and do the things we do, you have to believe that they know what they're talking about. No man is an island. No man lives by himself. I lived out there in the cold by myself for a long, long time. I walked down at that pool this morning and looked down that magnificent gorge and I almost froze to death. I was all out there by myself. Out there in that cold, cold world, all by myself. Then I walked back in here into the warmth of this room and the fellowship of this program and I'm warm all over. That's exactly what life is. When I'm standing out there in that cold, cold world all by myself, I'm going to freeze to death. But you see, I turned around one day in Alcoholics Anonymous and found out that I never walk alone. I don't walk alone. I don't walk alone no more. Wherever I am, God is. And wherever God is, you are. We're all God's children. All of us are. If one of us is, we all are. God just doesn't make junk, I'll tell you that. He don't make junk. We turn ourselves into a junk pile, maybe. Humans do. But not God. This is a magnificent program. This book, Alcoholics Anonymous, tells me what I'm supposed to do and everything in my life. It tells me what I tell newcomers. It tells them exactly what's happened to me. And that's what I've tried to do this weekend. I've tried to tell you exactly what's happened to me. From 30 years ago to this very minute, I've told you exactly what's happened to me. What's happened to me is a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what's happened to me, a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing else. I haven't aspired to anything else. I had a guy ask me one time, we were going to a meeting, he said, why do you do this? Why do you keep going out and doing this, Johnny? Why do you keep going out night after night after night after night to these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? Why do you keep doing that? I said, they've given me so much, I got to give it away. I can't keep it. But you see, if Alcoholics Anonymous has never given you anything, you don't have to give it back. If you haven't been given anything, how would you give it? If you've never been filled, you would never have to empty up. If you're empty, you stay empty. But Alcoholics Anonymous fills me up. My cup overflows. Yea, I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, but I fear no evil. It's amazing. St. Francis of Assisi said, make me a servant. Make me an instrument, St. Francis said. Make me an instrument. What's an instrument for? An instrument to be used, to be played. And sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel like a very fine instrument being played and tuned. I feel like I'm part of an orchestra this weekend, and all your instruments, and we're all playing our little parts and tunes. And sometimes when I'm alone back there in my little room reading my book, I can hear the music. It's music of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yakety, 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 yakety. Music I heard yesterday afternoon up there on the veranda. We were laughing and giggling and throwing nickels on the table. It's the music that I heard when we were sitting over here in the corner watching people play hearts. You know, they were laughing and giggling and dropping that old Queen of Spades on each other. Music and the laughter of Alcoholics Anonymous is the music of my soul. It warms my soul. Makes me feel whole. It's the very depths of the thing that I'd look for in a bottle of wine and in a joint of weed and an ounce of heroin. It's what I thought it was in any of the hypodermic syringe when I stuck it in my arm when I was 13 years old. That's the music I've been looking for from the time of my inception to this very instant. The music that warms my soul is the laughter of God's children. It's magnificent. If you haven't tried this thing, I'm supposing that you should try this thing. If you don't have the directions in your life, seek out the directions in your life. Be willing for it to come and God give it to you. You only have to be willing. You only have to say, I want. I'm willing. What am I supposed to do now? And I'll guarantee you, just like I could come through that window if that's what was necessary. I actually believe if I really needed something, to bring my fulfillment in my life, I could walk back in my room and be sitting there, no matter what it was. I really believe that. I live in total expectation of that. You see, I believe this more than anything that I know of. And I don't have any religious education or a lot of education. I spent a lot of time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that everything that would be necessary in my life for me, everything that would be necessary in my life for me, for my fulfillment in life, will be given to me. Just as much as that tree out there that I'm looking at, everything in that tree's life that's necessary for its fulfillment in life is going to be given to it. It's part of nature. That's nature's law. The difference between me and that tree is that tree don't ever try to be nothing else but a tree. People like me are the only thing that ever try to be anything but what God wants them to be. Whatever I think I'm supposed to be is not necessarily what God wants me to be. When I'm trying to be what God wants me to be, I live in peaceful harmony with me and the world around me. It's when I'm trying to be something that I'm not. It's when I'm troubled. So I stand here before you today, and I'm sure as I'm standing here that everything that's necessary for my fulfillment in life is going to be given to me. Everything. Through no effort of my own. The only requirement is that I fulfill certain conditions, follow certain directions, and do the things that God's kids do to act like God's kids. I also know that everything that would hinder my fulfillment in my life will be removed from me through no effort of my own. Through no effort of my own. The only requirement is that I fulfill the conditions of this program of living, the directions in life from these people, and try to act like one of God's kids. And I just walk hand in hand, walk on down the road with you. Walk down the road with one another, with our arms around one another, because we love one another, because we want to. Do these things for free and for fun, what Charlie used to tell me. Because you want to. Not because you have to. What a wise statement that is. In our book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in one of the stories in the back by an old gal I used to know and love by the name of Wynne Laws, who wrote a story in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous called Keys of the Kingdom. She said, freedom is doing what you ought to do because you want to do it. Freedom is doing what you ought to do because you want to do it, not because they think I should, or you think I should, or he thinks I should, or it thinks I should. Doing what I ought to do because I want to do it. Because I love to do it. And that's what I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous for 28 years. I've done what I ought to do most of the time because I want to. I guess I could stand here this morning and I could thank you for every different thing that I got. I can thank you for the way I feel and for the way I'm going to feel and for the things that are mine and for the things that aren't mine. I can thank you for all them things. What I'd like to do this morning, I think more than anything else, is that I'd like to thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. But I think even more important than anything else I know of, I'd like to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for my God. Now, I'd like for you to do me a big favor. This is the only thing I've asked of you to do all weekend. I'd like you to turn to the guy next to him and tell him that you love him. Because I'd like to tell you all that I all love you very much. And I hope that someday, somewhere, that we could all gather up in the spirit of love again on the weekend and share with one another what you've shared with me this weekend. Your love and your understanding and your patience and your goodness. Now, after a moment of silent meditation, I'd like for you all to stand and join hands and join with me in saying the Lord's Prayer. And remember what the words are as we started. It's Our Father.
Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen. He is our last favorite work.